Hey, what is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented by Underdog Fantasy. We are recording on the evening of Tuesday, February the 20th. I am your host, Vlad Sedler, at RotoGut on Twitter, joined by my co-host, third episode in, Jason Anthony at Booms62. Jay, what is going on? How was your weekend? What's new in the baseball world?
Happy Tuesday, Vlad. I actually got really excited today. I think from your old pod, your co-host on this pod, Maddie Wood, posted 4 weeks until Vegas. That really got the blood flowing. So thanks, Maddie. I am just can't wait, man. I can't believe it's only 4 weeks away. Just the best weekend of the year.
It is. It is. And all the lead up to it is crazy too, because everybody starts to get into it. Now we're past the Super Bowl. A lot of the folks that are more casual players are starting to jump in with thoughts and looking at market values and things like that. And draft boards are all over the place. I just started Tout Wars. That is a draft and hold. So it's like the draft champions on NFBC. It's a 50 rounder. Lots of really good players in that. And I got the 7th pick, and I just popped in, got my valuations in for the OBP. So that's really the only category difference. It's 5x5, but OBP instead of average. And it's just like a wonk to the brain, like looking at the type of guys like, oh my gosh, like maybe I need to be taking Harper here at 7 or 8. So do you play any of those OBP leagues, or you keep it straight roto?
I did a head-to-head league with OBP, and it just threw me off so much trying to jump back and forth between valuations and free agent pickups, things like that. I'm strictly focused NFBC now.
Yeah, and then we've got TGFBI is starting up soon. Justin Mason's Podapalooza is about to hit this weekend, maybe by the time you're listening to this podcast, so maybe make sure to check that out. I believe Todd Whitestone from FTN is going to be one of the folks there this weekend. Before we get into our topic of the day, we're going to be talking about catchers. Lots of debate there as always, and we'll also touch on a little bit of the utility players. But before we do, just a couple of updates, a little housekeeping. We did record our first live stream of the year in partnership with the NFBC. It was a 10-team cut line, best ball points draft. And so it was a 10-teamer that I drafted. It's on the FTN YouTube. And the Siege popped in, old friend of the industry of mine. He popped in. He was in that draft. He gave me some crap about Tyler O'Neill, got my blood boiling. And Gialdi was there as well, Anthony Gialdi. So check that out. And then this upcoming Thursday, it's going to be the Beat Jason Anthony, the Beat Booms Online Championship, 12-team RotoWire OC. That's going to be 8:30 Pacific time. And of course, you can watch it on YouTube anytime after that. Quick question on that. Are you, what are you looking at for KDS for, you know, setting up your draft order in a 1 through 12? How different is it for you than from a 15 KDS?
I think both the 12 and 15 this year, I'm doing, as our buddy Matt Modica says, a straight butta. I'm really not messing around with it. I think at the 12, there's an argument after pick 4 or 5 to jump towards the back, because that pick at 12, 13, I think I just watched a draft or heard of a draft where the guilds went Freddie Freeman, Aaron Judge at 12, 13. And I could not think of a better start in a draft, but I'm 1 through 12 and just seeing where it falls and drafting from there.
Yeah, that makes sense. I do play around with the KDS a little bit more. I think I am kind of fine with the middle, but I kind of like the back end of a 12 teamer a lot of times, because there's always just some player that you aren't expecting to fall to you. And of course, 12 teamers are always looking stronger, especially when you see a draft board. But yeah, a lot of gems pop up. And I think a lot of it has to do with mapping out and the way that you sort of line things up sort of once you know your KDS spot, whether that is a 15 teamer or a 12 teamer. That's actually an article that I used to write every year. It's about KDS strategy and draft mapping. And actually, I've got someone better at this than me on the team at FTN, Mike Mager. It's coming out on Wednesday. By the time this podcast is out, you will be able to read Mike Mager's article. I already had a sneak preview of it, and it looks pretty freaking good about KDS planning and draft mapping. So we got that. We've got some Beat Eric Cross OCs coming up, a Beat Vlad one as well. That's me. Spring training series is now out. That's something that Lucas Beery has started. He's just looking over anything that's fantasy relevant in spring training with injuries, lineup changes, new pitches, just anything that's actionable, kind of separating that from the noise. And then, of course, if you did miss it, make sure you check it out. Jeff Zimmerman of The Process of Fangraphs. He wrote a wonderful draft guide article on Platoon. So make sure you check that out. We've still got that Seager 5 promo at FTN Fantasy, ftnfantasy.com. It's 5% off. Seager 5 is that promo. Everything you need, updated projections, Delta rankings, draft ranking grid is out now, the 12-team rankings grid. Have you looked at that thing, by the way? It's kind of a beast to manage.
Yeah, I haven't dove into it enough. As I get closer to draft season, I will. I actually just read Lucas's article. I thought I had a lot of good tidbits, kind of mining the news-ish for FTN. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. We'll have to pay a royalty on that one. So
thank you, Jeff.
We'll do that, eh? Thank you, Jeff. No, it's great. And actually, Jake Kuchek, who's one of our prospect guys, he is going to we're going to actually make it a twice-a-week thing because I think it's important to be able to kind of stay on top of things going on in spring training a couple of times a week because there is going to start to be a lot of movement, a lot of news to cover. So we're going to be covering that twice a week from Lucas and Jake. All right, utility guys, but you threw in a little note on the outline. You wanted to talk about something?
Yeah, I saw you just posted, I think it was your first 7 picks from your new draft champions you're doing, the big boy. Started a little different. I think it allowed you to do it with the 1 pick, but why don't you talk about that first start with the DC you just started?
Yeah, so last year I played in the 1K entry draft champions, and obviously there are a lot of great players, heavy hitters. It's tough competition. Last year in my 1K DC, I stepped out of that thing, or even during the draft, I was like, wow, this is like my best DC, and how random is it that it happens to be, you know, against this group and whatnot. And man, it was cruising. It was in first, second place for most of the season. And lo and behold, around, I think maybe late July, August, after the All-Star break, Phil Dussault, of course, Phil Dussault starts creeping. My 10-point lead is now 5. Then we're tied. He's up by 5. And before you know it, season ends. I just couldn't catch the guy. So I came in second place in that one. And so I wasn't going to do one this year. And then I saw a draft room that was almost full. I was like, all right, let me jump into this thing. Maybe I'll get lucky, because I still, to this day, through 20 draft champions and gladiators, all these drafts, even underdog, I have not even had, I've done like 10, 12 underdog drafts, not even a number one pick there. And so what do you know? I click run KDS and boom, get the number one pick. And it just feels different. Dude, I don't know what to tell you. It's like you just kind of feel on top of the world. I hope it works out, of course, for all of us with the 1 pick, but it really just kind of feels like an advantage.
It definitely changes the draft feeling getting Acuna. I don't think you need to play around with that and look at anybody else, but writing those stats in the start really frees up everything else. And that guy, Phil Dussault, I think is how you pronounce it. He's a pretty good robot. It's really nice guy. Looking forward to seeing him in Vegas. But guy you want to beat. But I guess second place last year is a good payday. And this year's, I think you got a good chance with how you started.
Yeah, so I did take, of course, I took Acuna at the 1 pick. And at the turn, second, third round turn, so that's picks 30 and 31, I knew I was going to take at least one starting pitcher, and I was considering 2. Kirby was gone. Kevin Gausman was gone. Zach Wheeler, of course. Zach Wheeler is going earlier and earlier. He's usually going somewhere around like 19 to 22. And so the only guy really there was Luis Castillo. That's who I took. But then I think what seems like somewhat of a gift now, Pete Alonso fell there as well. And so it was interesting. I was considering Ellie De La Cruz for just like one split second. And it just didn't make sense to me. It's like it's higher entry DC. I don't necessarily need to take, you know, such massive risks. Let me just kind of lock in. I mean, nothing is locked in life, right? But like, you know, he's healthy every year. Alonso is good for 40 bombs. I think I tweeted something the other day about since his rookie season, 2019, he's the only guy average. Well, him and Judge are the only guys averaging more than 40 homers a season, but he's like at 45. To Judge's 40, and that's like with the prorated 2020 season. But just I mean, usually he's going like 25, 27. So right there at that 2-3 turn, I was content with it. So it felt like a kind of a good start there.
Yeah, when that pitching gets really pushed up, a la main event season, it does allow some hitters to fall. And putting that power with that speed with Acuna, it's a pretty fun start.
Yeah, so then at the 4-5 turn, so that's like pick 60, 61, you just have a little bit more flexibility. And so I just didn't necessarily want to really punch any hitters there at that point. It's your, I mean, Urizarrena's gone at that point. Nico Horner isn't necessarily a good fit with an Acuna team. But I ended up going with two pitchers there. And it was a tough call, but one of them I knew I was taking. And they're both I took ahead of ADP. One was Kode Senga, who VDP FTN projections have pretty high up there among the top 15 guys, and hopefully a little in, you know, help with the whip. And then I popped Zach Eflin there as well, and his ADP is a little lower. But with my next pick being 90, there's just no chance that I was going to get him. And so my thought process there was I had Castillo, who's a generally a decent whip guy, but I think there's a little bit of whip downside. And then you add Senga there, who for an ace also has a little bit of high whip, right? If you're talking like in the 1-2 to 1-3 area, that's still for an ace, it's a little high. And the guy that I passed on, which of course I may end up regretting, and who usually nobody passes up when he's available there, was Grayson Rodriguez. So I ended up going Senga and Eflin. I got the low walk rate, the low whip from Eflin. I thought that was kind of a nice pairing there instead of Grayson. You think that was a mistake?
I think you have to make that pick there. Grayson and Senga just don't go together, in my opinion, with both over a 1-2 whip. You're really chasing the rest of the draft. And we talked one of the previous episodes is a whip's one of the categories you can't catch up later. So to get that stabilizer in Eflin to pair with Castillo, who's actually a pretty good whip guy now, Senga might be a little higher, but the strikeouts, the wins, the ratios are all the ERAs. Pretty good. That's a fun start. And then I don't think you stopped there as far as the yellow brick road.
No. So then I took two closers and only did so because this is a draft champions where, again, 50 rounds, no fab. And anytime I've built a team where I got one closer among that group of 12, 14, and we'll talk about closers in an upcoming episode. But whenever I do that and I wait for my second guy, I just always feel anxious throughout because past even the Kenley Jansen, the Edbert Alzolays, the next guys are really Jose Leclerc, right? You got David Robertson in the mix there, maybe even Josh Spores. And then you got Jose Alvarado, who manager says they're going to be in a committee. He's clearly the lead there, but there's the lefty and he has an injury history. And then after that, it's like Mason Miller, it's the Washington guys. And I hate dealing with that. You know, I just want a little bit of safety and closer. So all that to say, I took Fairbanks from Tampa. P. Fairbanks, and I took Evan Phillips. The guys on the board that I passed up there at 90, one was Kyle Schwarber, who I am curious to ask how you think he would fit on a team like that. And the other one that I passed up was Will Smith.
Schwarber to go with Alonso doesn't make as much sense to me. Will Smith with the DCs, and it's kind of similar to closer with the catcher. You need to lock in those two solid players. It's ironic calling Pete Fairbanks safe, right? When you're talking about saves, but the arm is elite and you're probably right in at least 20 saves with great ratios and strikeouts. And you could always handcuff him if you need to later, but it does lock in two closers and it helps you sleep a little better at night as that slow draft keeps going. So I like it.
And probably not too much Pete stacking that I can do because the only other guy really is Pete Crow Armstrong, maybe like in 20 rounds. And then, of course, I don't think I'll be drafting David Peterson or Jace Peterson. But anyways, enough of the dad jokes. Let's talk a little bit about the utility guys before we jump into the catcher pool. And we can just talk about them as a group. And I'll lay the land here a little bit. You've got Shohei Ohtani going in the middle towards the end of the first round. You've got Marcell Ozuna going around pick 170, which per VDP rankings here at FTN, it's a little too high, I think. So I have him in the 130s, 140s. We can talk about him in a second. In the early 200s, you've got, or middle 200s even, it's Eloy Jimenez, the oft-injured one. And then old school veteran still unsigned, JD Martinez. Right after him, creeping up little by little, as he is gets apparently healthier by the day, Byron Buxton with an ADP of 270. And then they're in the back with an ADP of around 390. So you're talking like rounds 25 is Joey Meneses, who will should get first base eligibility pretty quickly. So let's just break it down from the top of the board. You have Ohtani there. I assume in what cases do you not take Ohtani? Where are you not interested?
The only time I might think about passing on Ohtani towards the end of the first round would be a draft champions, where it would fill up your DC or your utility spot in a DC early, which really kind of hamstrings roster construction a little bit. Now, I'm still taking him over Harper and Olson and probably J-Ram in that group, but he is just elite. There's a minor concern in the back of my head with Ohtani coming off a second Tommy John. I don't know if it's a fallacy or not, but I've always operated under the assumption, which is dangerous, that hitting is impacted by a Tommy John surgery. You look at the first 2 months of Bryce Harper's year last year, he did come back very quickly, but the power was sapped. He seemed to get it back as the year went along, but it kind of worries me for a power hit a little bit. But Ohtani's so good. He is a unicorn, truly. It's hard to poke any holes in that profile.
Yeah, and if you think about it, if you're looking at the first round, if you're talking about like guys maybe people aren't fully comfortable with, and of course everyone's different, but I kind of get the vibe that some people have concerns about Corbin Carroll. Just as far as, you know, repeating that kind of number and the shoulder injury there towards the end of last year. Of course, there's always some concern about Fernando Tatis, but of course we know the upside there is, I mean, the other Acuna, right? I mean, just 2 years ago, we're talking about those two, deciding between them and Trey Turner for the first pick. And if anybody can go 40, 50-40 or something, it is somebody like a Tatis. And then Ohtani, really, he's really the only other guy. If not for the injury, we'd be taking him probably in the middle of the first round, even with the utility only, because you think about him just snuggled there comfortably in a lineup between Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. It's just, too good to be true. Like just category goodness galore. And gosh, what can be the upside with like runs and RBI, for example, right? Like 250 plus combined.
Yeah. Yeah. That offense, especially the top four, top five is just, it's a lot of fun fantasy wise, and you can just rack up counting stats.
And then Marcell Ozuna, he's kind of the next guy there. Do you think I'm off here with the valuation where I've got him more as like a eighth, ninth rounder as opposed to like 11th, 12th? I mean, this is a dude that hit 40 home runs last year. He earned second round value in 15 team leagues last year. He's still on the Braves. It's wild. And to me, I mean, right now I think we have him as like a $15 value, a guy that's going to get you like 90 ribbies, 30 plus home runs, probably a decent average, usually doesn't kill you there. Like, I know it's like a roster construction thing, but sometimes it's just like Occam's razor to me. It's like the most obvious is just the way to go. Like, so why are you going to pass up a powerful Brave in the middle of that lineup just because he's utility only?
Will the real Marcell Ozuna please stand up? I don't know what he is, Vlad. You look at last year, and that year, 100 RBIs, 274, 40 home runs. But you look at the previous two seasons, 226, 213 batting average.
Yeah,
so,
good point.
What is he? He hit 338 in the short season, the COVID year, but 241 before that. So he seems more like a 240 hitter, but even at ADP round 12 at 240 in that lineup hitting 30 bombs, you're looking at 100 RBIs, it could pay off. I don't know what he is. So I'm not out, I'm not in, but I'm interested.
And then just two guys that fit a similar profile in a lot of ways, and they're going 60, 80 picks later. And there might be some movement in ADP as we get through spring, and that's Eloy Jimenez and JD Martinez. Of course, Eloy Jimenez is the the other kind of like Byron Buxton, Mike Trout, Jazz Chisholm, that group of guys where you know what the upside is and it's enormous. And this is a guy that can probably return second round value even without the stolen bases in the right team context. The problem here is the team context stinks with the White Sox, probably one of the worst offenses in baseball. And I mean, the guy always finds a way to get injured, right? And so you would think maybe him not, you know, being in the field as much or really at all. I mean, you would think that he wouldn't get injured, but he just kind of always finds a way. But maybe he's just one of those guys. Maybe he's just one of those guys we're sleeping on that, like, you know, has the 35, 40 plus home run power. And in a lineup like that can even drive in 100 runs with Luis Robert there. Are you in at all? Or will you consider it as we get into the fab type of drafts?
If any of my friends are listening, they know me as the Eloy guy. I have been historically on this guy, mainly because the hit tool I feel is fairly elite with the power and the batting average upside. Funny story about Eloy. I was driving to Vegas, I think the year after COVID, and I had all this plan to draft him in my auction. He was going to be a build-around player. I had already drafted him in a main before Vegas. And I'm driving down, and Matt Modica texts me. He hurt his shoulder in spring training trying to catch a home run over the fence. Mm-hmm. I was so devastated from about Bakersfield to, you know, to Hatchapi, wherever the heck I was driving to. It was a long couple hours, but it's just the guy can't stay healthy. He might have just pulled his hamstring while I was talking right there.
Dude.
So I'm interested still at 14th, 15th, 16th round. He keeps falling, it feels like. I'll take him at the right price, but not a target for me.
Yeah, he came into the league as a 22-year-old. I'm sorry, yeah, as a 22-year-old with the White Sox. And as a rookie, the guy crushed 31 bombs. And this was, it was in about 120 games too. So he kind of set the precedent, or at least, you know, foreshadowed great things to come. And since then, he has only had more than 350 plate appearances in a season once. And that was last year. And ironically, his power was down. He's usually a guy with an isolated power in the 250s range. And last season, he was around 170. It was just never fully himself. Everything else was fine. I mean, exit velocity average on the average was down a little bit. Instead of being like, you know, 92, 93 miles per hour on average, he was like at 91. Not a big deal. Still above average. Hard hit rate down from 55% the year prior to like 47%. It's still upper echelon. So there's a lot to like as far as, like you mentioned, the hit tool, right? Because he's almost like a, dare I say, like a poor man's Jordan Alvarez, because he can hit 40 bombs with 300 if things were right. If, like, say you put him in Houston.
Yeah, one of the few guys in the league with that power profile that has that batting average upside. The only downside, the White Sox might not get 100 RBIs as a team this year. That lineup is Oakland A bad if there's an injury to Robert or Jimenez in there.
Yeah, this is true.
Sorry,
and then, yeah, Joey Meneses. This is a guy that, it's the rankings, they're behind paywall. We talk about it a little bit here and there, but let's just say we're rather bullish on Meneses, or at least it's not that we're bullish on Meneses. It's that to us, it appears there's quite a market inefficiency that, like, literally the market has it wrong, placing him in like the late 300s, like 370 to 400 in ADP. It just doesn't make sense. It's just the fact that he's just kind of a forgotten man. Doesn't play for a great offense in Washington, even though they had some spurts last season of fantasy value with like CJ Abrams and Lane Thomas, obviously. But Joey Meneses quietly drove in 87 runs. And the issue always with him is like, oh, where's the power? It's this untapped power. Does it really matter if you're talking about a guy, like, even if you take him four rounds ahead of ADP and he still only hits you 12 home runs? I mean, you know, you're still going to stream him. You're not going to, you know, you kind of find your spots for him. He's not like a high-end guy for you in your lineup. You're not expending high draft capital. So what is really the downside? Isn't it all upside?
It's all upside at the price. You know, people were worried coming off, you know, the short sample size in 22. Who was he? Older breakout. Other than the power, he backed up the run production. The RBIs, 89. And he's hitting behind CJ Abrams and Lane Thomas, two basically fantasy baseball darlings who everybody's projecting to get on base and steal bases. So the RBI potential could even go higher from there. It doesn't make sense to me why he's going at 360 instead of 260 ADP.
Exactly. I'm with you there. And then, of course, we can't go into a discussion on catchers and finish up with utility without talking about Byron Buxton. And listen, it's what else really needs to be said other than the obvious? And is it even worth, is it even, does it even bear repeating that, like, if he stays healthy, but it's that if part, right? Isn't that, that's even can sometimes be annoying to people because we're all kind of talking about the same thing. Like, we know what if, but the real question should be, what's your price? Like, what are you willing? To some people, it's nothing. Dave McDonald, I know, just will not drop Byron Buxton no matter what. If he beats him, that's fine because they're probably, that's the beauty of fantasy baseball. There are 30 rounds and lots of players and player pools vast. You don't have to target everyone. You can still win without him. But is there a price for you for Buxton, or are you just completely out?
There's a price. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near what I'm willing to pay come main event season. It seems like the ADP is already starting to fly up. I know it's listed at roughly 280 right now, but I think come big draft season, I think he's going to be, if he's healthy through spring training, which he is right now, he's talking about stealing 30 bases, best shape of his life crap. And, Buxton's case, my knees have never felt better. I want to steal 30 bags. People hear this and they dream on the old Byron Buxton to 30-30 upside. So I can see him going in the 10th, 11th round come big draft season. I have zero interest there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. Like 10th to 12th round range, if he just makes it through spring, I think is realistic. And so that's something I'm going to have to put little systems in check for myself so that when main event season does come and I'm finally there and all my prep and everything, that I'm not like loading up a team with, I got Jazz Chisholm and Ellie De La Cruz and Byron Buxton, because usually, listen, one of those guys will likely stay healthy all year and pop. It would be magic if all of them did. There's just, these things happen and it's all unpredictable. We just have no idea. And there's just some guys that happen to have injuries occur to them more often than others.
Yep. He's another guy that might have got injured while we were talking. I hope he has 500 at bats and does his thing because he's so much fun to watch. He's so much fun to play center field. And they're actually using him in center field, so that UT label should be shed pretty quick if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is in the case of Joey Meneses of Washington, and Byron Buxton, those guys sometime early to mid-April will both have different positions that you can use and be flexible with.
Yeah.
So let's jump into the catchers. But before we do, needed to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that MLB draft season, it's here. And the easiest place to play fantasy baseball is at Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy baseball drafters have been quite active in their best ball format fantasy drafts, including myself. It's where you draft a 20-round team of hitters and pitchers, and the best score from the team you drafted becomes your score for each week of the MLB season. The drafts, they're constantly filling up each and every day. So go to Underdog Fantasy right now and draft in the dinger for your share of a $750,000 prize. First place is a cool 100K, and again, only $10 to draft. The tournament closes on opening day, March 28th, so jump in now. Sign up for Underdog and use that promo code FTN to get your first deposit match up to $100. That's 10 free dinger drafts. Again, use the promo code FTN and join Underdog today and get drafting for the upcoming MLB season. Catchers overview. In general, we'll get into the argument here in a minute. But as far as positional scarcity, let's talk about that. It's not even an elephant in the room. It's just a thing. Like, there are people that love to draft catchers early. There are those that don't. And then the majority of people are just in the middle. It's a matter of value who falls to me, right?
There's very strong arguments on either side. It's almost like politics or religion with catchers. It feels like you can't convince somebody if they believe one thing, something different. They just feel so strongly on it. There's really nothing you can say to kind of get them off that. But it works for that individual, and that's how they build their team, and more power to them.
Yeah, so I think I have my positional tiers series in at FTN Fantasy, and my article last week about catchers, and I always have a little bit of an intro about it. But listen, kind of maybe it's old hat, kind of boring, but I do kind of bring up the story of the 2016 season. I used to do my projections by hand, and I would pop them into Rotolap, and I remember when I did it that year, I was looking at two guys, Wilson Ramos and the still active Yasmani Grandal. Those guys were both popping in like top 8, 9 overall in my catcher pool. Yet their ADP was like catcher 20, catcher 21. And that was just the lucky season. I ended up drafting both of those guys that were very helpful. I did not need to, FAP all season, a catcher. It was just lucky that year. I mean, a little bit of skill there, I guess, but that doesn't happen every year. A lot of times something happens with our catcher and one of our two catchers in two catcher leagues, and you're having to chase like the bottom of the world, right? Like at some point it's like, you're looking at, Tom Murphy, Martin Maldonado, just like based on lefty and righty matchups, and it gets really tough. So there is some, there's something about just having your two guys locked in and they're valuable and just kind of carrying you throughout the season if possible, but it comes sometimes at a high cost. And a lot of us are, there definitely is like a scarcity to the position. And because of it, that's why you see some of the top catchers at the top of the board.
Yeah. As much of a scarcity as there is, it's the deepest I've ever seen catcher. I think there's 17 guys or 17 catchers. I'd be loved to have my catcher one, which just is unheard of. It's usually 4 or 5. And by the time you do the 6th catcher, you're kind of rolling your eyes and kind of plugging your nose and taking them. There's guys that you're actually excited to draft this year. So it's actually a fun topic to kind of dive into and how deep it is and who we like, who we don't like.
Yeah. And for me, it's a thing where I usually am not drafting one of the early catchers. Like I think I've been in the anti JTL Romuto in the 3rd camp. Yet you've got, great players like Batflip Crazy, who is, he won our super auction league last year. He's always crushing in leagues and he takes early catchers and still dominates like the rest of drafts. So there's no, it's the beauty of fantasy baseball. Like there is no one set way. There are just so many paths to winning and just so many different layers to it. And there's no right or wrong approach. I think it's just a matter of what you do. What I like to do is, if it's one of the early guys, like if it's, like Adley Rutschman, for example, right? He's the clear number one. I don't actually know if he's clear. We'll talk about that in a minute, but he is now at a point where any draft I'm in, he seems to be going like a round ahead of ADP. Like a lot of people just want to kind of be in on the first guy. And then he's going like in the 40s or 50s sometimes. And for me, it's just too high of a price to pay, especially considering the next guys in the list, kind of like the tier two or like, your top, rounding out the top three, those guys are pretty close in fantasy value. So I don't know. Have you been drafting any Rutschman, and how do you just feel about that in general?
I think that you're looking at that ADP and that feeling it's still draft champions bias. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons his ADP is so high. I think 580 at bats or plate appearances last year, that in draft champions, you just can't recreate that. And there's such a huge advantage when you're getting those plate appearances with a good batting average. And then the counting stats that come along with that. Come Fab season, I'm going to have a much harder time clicking the button on him than I would in a draft champions.
Oh, it wasn't even 5, bro. It was 680. It was like 687, which is, it's unheard of with with catchers. I mean, the guy played every day. I think he only missed 6 total games and they were pretty much like rest games. And he's 25. I mean, it's incredible. If he stole bases, I mean, he'd be like, he'd definitely be like probably like a 2nd, 3rd round pick. And that's what we saw with Realmuto over the years. The one thing I did mention, it was something I talked about in the article, and it's a little bit anecdotal because I didn't dig into like who these teams drafted. But looking at the top 10 of last year's main event, it's partially in Vegas drafts, partially online, but it's a $1,750 entry. It's kind of like the granddaddy of competitive fantasy games. And I went back and I just wanted to see like what catchers did these top 10 teams have, the top 10 overall out of a field, I think, of 800. And most of these guys were Fab guys. And part of the reason is a lot of catchers just kind of missed last year. Like, for example, like per the Razzball player rater, there were only 3 or 4 catchers that even earned at least double digits or at least $10. It was William Contreras, it was Rutschman, Will Smith, and then Cal Rally by like a dime, only, you know, earn like 10-10. And if you're looking at last year's top 10 teams, one guy they had in common, or that, you know, that everybody, most seemed to have, was Logan Ohapi. And of course, if you remember, he was drafted last year, got hurt early, missed most of the season, came back and smashed in September. So Logan Ohapi was kind of a nice little boost to those teams, because he hit like 9 home runs over the last like 3 weeks or something. But other than that, I'm looking and there just aren't a lot of, like, you know, Dalton Varsho was a bust. He was a top 10 catcher last season. I mean, he was going like in the 40s. Same thing with MJ Melendez. You know, I mean, JT Realmuto was technically a bust as well. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of going down a rabbit hole and trying to prove some point because it's random and I didn't see who they drafted. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's fascinating to kind of dig back through it and what worked, what didn't. There's so many busts, and no matter what position it is, so it's hard to kind of, you know, pick or what cherry pick these stats. And Logan Ohapi, who was their second catcher they might have ran with the rest of the season up until that.
Yeah, I mean,
when you say smashed, he smashed. My God, he finished a year on fire. That was fun to watch. Unfortunately, it wasn't on any of my teams, but it is interesting that there was not a ton of capital spent for the top 10 main event teams, other than you look at Slack, who won the main event, having Varsho and Elias Diaz.
Yeah. And I mean, looking back last year, there were a little bit of a different kind of makeup of the pool, because it was, it was Realmuto in the third round of 15 teamers. It was Varsho like in the fourth. And then like Will Smith and Salvador Perez and Adley Rutschman were going in like the fifth or sixth. And that's really those are really your only guys going in the top 100. Pool's a little bit slightly different this year, because we've got Adley Rutschman going like, you know, fourth round. And then you got a little glut there with William Contreras, Will Smith, and JT Realmuto. When I wrote this 2 weeks ago, this thing has already been updated. There are already changes. And one of those things is me, and it is devaluing Realmuto a little bit. So now our rankings are at a point where William Contreras is pretty close in value to Adley Rutschman. And then it's kind of Will Smith. And then there's a little bit of drop off with Realmuto. But are you seeing the same issues with me as I am with Realmuto, as far as, you know, team context, age, and stuff like that?
Yeah, you worry about batting seventh, possibly, in the Phillies lineup, which could drive down run production. The nice thing, he still stole 15 bags last year, so that speed from the catcher position is so valuable. You're just not getting speed from many other places, maybe a Bo Naylor, or a little Gabriel Moreno, but overall, that it's found money in the catcher position. The skills are declining, but he's still pretty solid where he's going, and I don't think it's a draft reach at the ADP. It's kind of, if you need the speed or want to build with the extra speed, maybe you want heavy power early, it's a nice little start to kind of catch up and chippy steals.
And then, I mean, I kind of just fell in love with the profile of William Contreras as I was researching for this. And man, I don't know. There's just something about another guy that is another 600 plate appearance plus guy, going to play essentially every day. By the way, did the Gary Sanchez thing ever work itself out? Like, he like didn't text back and didn't sign his contract?
I just read they're finalizing a renegotiated contract. So
he ghosted.
I think he's getting signed with Milwaukee as we speak, which that could hit Contreras's plate appearances, because that was one of the big things. He was another guy, only two with over 600 plate appearances last year, according to your article. So good work there on that. But I like the skills, but the playing time, the lineup context, the Milwaukee seems to be punting a little bit. If they happen to trade Adames, if Yelich gets hurt, who's he driving in? So that's my biggest concerns with him. Outproduces expected batting average by quite a bit. But he seemed to sacrifice some power for some bat-to-ball skills, so maybe it's sustainable, but he can hit the ball. And he seems to have surpassed his older brother now.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. We remember a couple of years ago with Atlanta, where he had that. I mean, he already showed a little bit in some in some work with Atlanta in 2021. I mean, he was just a kid. He, you know, basically had under 200 plate appearances. But you know, she showed a little pop, a lot of strikeouts, but he's always been a low double digits walk rate guy. So he's always right around 10.5%, has consistently reduced his strikeout rate per season. And exactly like you mentioned, gave up a little bit of power for the contact. And yeah, he's outperformed his expected batting average two seasons in a row by quite a bit. So if you're looking at him and thinking that he can repeat a 280, 290 season, you know, probably not likely, but again, he's probably not going to hurt you there. He's probably not going to go back to being like a, you know, 28, 30% strikeout rate guy. And, I mean, listen, 18 home runs basically in each of the last two seasons on average. And this is like limited games, right? He hit 20 home runs in like 370 plate appearances when he was in his final season with the Braves in 2022. A lot to like there with Contreras. He's the one guy that I'm kind of interested in. And then just a quick touch on Will Smith. How much playing time do you even see him? Because the Dodgers, if they're just like, they're winning, they're crushing, they want to save him. Like, how often do you think he's going to sit? Because it's really like, I mean, they don't necessarily want to give Austin Barnes much playing time other than the occasional rest.
You know, everybody thought he was going to DH a little bit last year, but he really didn't. So I don't know if he's really losing any at bats compared to last year, but you want to talk about a model of consistency. You can basically write in what he's going to do, batting average, home runs, RBIs. RBIs might pick up a little bit with Otani there, but just solid, know what you're going to get. And there's something to that in fantasy baseball, is knowing what you're going to get, kind of back at the baseball card, write it in and just move on.
All right. One more guy who would essentially round out the top five, and he's been creeping into the top 100 in some leagues. And even in 12 team OCs, I've seen him go like in the 80s, 90s, because it's quite alluring, the power of Yainer Diaz and the team context there, and just like everything about his profile minus the walk rate. I think that's the one thing that isn't too enticing. But again, if you're not really playing in OBP leagues, you don't really care. The upside's pretty nice. Are you in, have you been in at the price of 90 to 120 overall?
I have. The walk rate is an interesting conversation, because fantasy baseball, we're looking for RBIs, we're looking for home runs, we're looking for opportunities to drive people in. A slow catcher getting on base with a walk, does that really help you? It actually might be a negative. It might be a positive that he swings more. And his K rate was under 20%, mm-hmm. swinging a lot. 12% barrel rate, 44% hard hit. The guy can mash. Now, it's a very small sample size, but expected batting average, 287. If he gets the opportunity to get the playing time that I think he can be up near Rutschman as far as the value earned at the end of the year. The issue you pointed out in your article was the pitch framing. His backup is elite. He is not. How much do the Astros value that? Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting how much they play him, and he could possibly get some DH time if they play Alvarez in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, Yainer Diaz was not ideal against lefties last season. I think he had like a 65 WRC plus, again, small sample, as you mentioned. But 150 WRC plus against righties. And then even the split in the isolated power, it was 163 against lefties. It was elite against righties at 292. And you mentioned the backup catcher there who they signed, who is a much better framer, much better defensively. That's Victor Caratini. And Victor Caratini, I should have looked this up beforehand, and I think I remember this, but I feel like he's had splits leaning towards better against lefties, but then maybe last year was reverse splits thing. I forget, something I might have to look up, but just interesting to note. And then again, Yainer Diaz, if he's just crushing it, why wouldn't you just pop him in at utility and make sure he does play almost every day?
Yeah. The path to batting average, or the path to at bats and to use that batting average is there. It's such a small sample size. We really don't know how the Astros plan on rolling him out this year. So it's a big unknown with a big payoff if it hits, but he's still expensive as far as the draft capital you have to use.
Yeah. Yeah. And plus, plus you got a 37-year-old Jose Abreu getting his Pilates on. you know that's going to have a positive effect in that lineup too, right?
Hey, don't be hating on Pilates, Vlad.
I'm not. Oh no, I'm the Judge Yoga guy. I'm all about it. By the way, I did learn though that Tyler O'Neill, someone says something. Oh, Tyler O'Neill is like he's doing yoga and Pilates now. I looked it up. He's been doing it for 2 years. So, you know, shows you how much that helps.
The problem is he's doing yoga and he Pilates with 100-pound weights.
Exactly. He's an animal, but that's for the outfield episode. Yeah. All right, let's talk about this next group. And this is the big glut of players. And you could break it down. You could slice it into in half. These would be the guys that are going like 130 to 160 overall. But essentially, it's a group going 130 to 180. So these are rounds 8 through 12. And I think in main events, I see it every year. A lot of times these catchers start to go a little later. People prioritize other things, other players. But then favorites start to kind of emerge. But you've got Williams' older brother, Wilson Contreras. You've got Sean Murphy in Atlanta, who really cooled off down the stretch last season for the Braves. You got veteran Salvador Perez. He's the only guy that in this group that's eligible at another position. You got it, can play him at first, but probably not ideal. And then you got big slugger, big dumpa, Cal Raleigh. And Francisco Alvarez. So let's kind of group those guys together. And with the one guy that is different from the rest of this bunch is Gabriel Moreno, because he's the only one of this group that does not have power, but could really help out an average and has good, I think, lineup context hitting in the middle of for Arizona lineup. But let's talk about those guys. Wilson Contreras, Sean Murphy, Cal Raleigh, Salvador Perez, Francisco Alvarez, and Gabriel Moreno.
Yeah, this is a fun group. I look at Wilson and it really feels like he should be up in the first tier rather than the mid tier. Second year on a big contract, which I believe really does matter. Somebody getting comfortable. I mean, there was some weird, weird stuff going on in St. Louis last year. He got benched. He was going to play the outfield. But once he settled in, he actually started to produce. And the guy, you know, top six round player last year, I don't see any skills decline. I see somebody that could pay off that six round value going in the 10th, 11th round this year.
I like the Contreras brothers. I think there's not a lot not to like, I guess you could say. I think there have been some injury, health concerns, but man, if Ollie Marmol, I know I kind of go after him all the time, and I swear it's not just personal having to do with the Tyler O'Neill thing, but just doesn't seem like he gets the most out of his guys. And especially last year with Goldschmidt and Arenado, just really not earning fantasy value, just didn't seem really motivated. I don't know what it was with these guys. Jordan Walker and Lars Nootbaar, two young guys that could, Nootbaar isn't even that young. He's 26. He's like 5 years older than Walker, but kind of young as far as MLB experience. But it's a good lineup, Nolan Gorman is there, Brendan Donovan at the top against righties. There's a lot to like here. Wilson Contreras in the middle of that is pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, batting order plays a large part to these guys' success. And so if they're hitting 7th, 8th, 9th, they're not going to have as many opportunities as somebody like Wilson that would be batting, 4th, 5th in a decent, if not above average, Cardinals lineup.
And among these other guys, just the other power guys, the guys that can hit you 25 bombs and probably won't help you in batting averages, Sean Murphy, Cal Raleigh, Sal Perez, and Francisco Alvarez. Do you have a favorite among that group? Is there somebody that stands out to you among the rest, or you kind of group them all together?
I have two favorites. It's Cal Raleigh and Sal Perez. I like any catcher with Sal Perez that's not playing catcher. We had the two guys last year with Melendez and Varsho that were playing outfield. It's just more at bats. Sal's not going to catch anywhere near as much as he used to. They have Freddie Fermin there now. Sal's basically a DH now, so can he stay healthier without getting dinged up behind the plate? Such a little nuance with the catching position is how often these guys get dinged up, wrist, hand, finger, foot, and it really affects their power, not to mention losing their legs squatting through the season. So he's someone I'm interested in, even though he is getting older and the skills are starting to decline. And Raleigh, I looked into, and I was actually a little surprised. He dropped his K rate 5% last year. He batting average still low, 230, but one of the few guys that hit 30 homers, or one of the, if not the only catcher that hit 30 homers. And the run production is there, the homers are there, the barrel rate's there. Cal Raleigh seems like a little bit undervalued if you can absorb the batting average.
Yeah, I have personally, I guess, a little bit of a, maybe it's a bias, a blind spot. I don't know what you want to call it, but these catchers that give you 25 home runs and can potentially hurt the average, and because I feel like I draft very sensitively to batting average, they usually don't kind of fit into my profile. Like I'd rather, you know, almost rather pay up for like a Will Smith or a Wilson Contreras who I feel like won't hurt my average, and in the case of Will Smith, just like incredible team context. And so, you know, Sal Perez, you bring up an interesting point. I mean, last year he played 140 games, 90 of those were a catcher, a lot less than usual. And so a lot of his, there's going to be a lot of impact here with how, where Sal Perez is playing, because if Freddie Freeman is looking good and he's, you know, he's doing well defensively, he's hitting, that then pushes Sal Perez to more DH appearances, which means almost like no Nelson Velasquez, right? Because he's the other DH there. He's what is just going to go to the minors. He's not going to play in the outfield, so there's a little bit of an impact there. So that's something interesting to pay attention to. And then, yeah, I mean, I don't know. All that to say that, like, I don't know, that I think you're right on the Wilson Contreras just kind of being head and shoulders above the rest of those guys.
Yeah, I guess with the batting average sensitivity, you're out on Francisco Alvarez.
I think so. And I think part of it is there's one guy I do like, Gabby Moreno, and I do want, I do like what you have in your notes here, because it looks like we have a point of dissension, because I'm obsessed, and I think I'm, and it's almost weird that I'm interested in a guy that can probably only hit me 10 to 12 home runs more than these guys are hitting 25. And I'm just, I don't know, I'm just kind of looking at it from the perspective of, man, if I can get a catcher hitting third or fourth in the lineup around Carroll and can steal a few bases actually, and is probably, the rest of the projection systems, as far as I'm concerned, are all under projecting his run in RBI, right? And he can hit me for good average, which I think I already said. There's a lot for me to like here, but it has to be the right context, has to be the right fit. If I already have like a Nico Horner on the team or something like that, or an Esteri Ruiz maybe because I really needed speed, then another, you know, 10 home run guy isn't necessarily great for me.
Yeah, I kind of got burnt on this last year with CJ Abrams, a top prospect that came up and struggled with the barrel rate. But I look at Gabriel Moreno and 4.8% barrel rate. The max EV is only 109 miles an hour. Hard hit rates average at 41%. The guy can hit, but I think there's a little playoff tax, and I
Yeah.
think there's a little potential, quote unquote, which is an ugly word because that means they haven't fulfilled it yet. I think he's closer to Keibert Ruiz, which is 10 picks later and towards the bottom of your ranks on the VDP. What do you see the difference between Moreno and Ruiz?
Oh, that's a good question. I probably a bias, and I also think for whatever reason, I like Moreno's lineup context better. Just kind of hitting higher in the lineup, and I think it's that ugly word that you use, the potential, the fact that I think that he can be like, you know, an 18 home run, 10, 12 stolen base guy with like a 285 average. And part of that bias might be from the excitement of when he was with Toronto, just like him coming up, and just something kind of subconsciously built in my head about like how much I like Gabriel Moreno, and he's like one of my guys, and he, you know, wanted to make it happen. So it might be that, which is ironic because Keibert Ruiz was like one of my favorite dudes too as a former Dodger prospect. And then like as soon as he goes to Washington, I like don't care about him. So that's a good point. Let me get back to you on
There's no Dodger bias at all,
that. Yeah, once they're gone, they're gone.
Bud.
All right, the next tier I like a lot. I really, 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 really like these guys. It's Mitch Garver, it's Logan Ohapi, Bo Naylor, Luis Camposano, your Keibert Ruiz you had mentioned, and Jonah Heim, last year's catching RBI leader, despite missing a good chunk of the last end of last season. Jonah Heim, how do you feel about those guys? Looking at like my rankings versus ADP, where do you think I am off on the market?
Looking through it, other than going back to Kiebert Ruiz, I think you're a little lower on him than you should be if you're that high on Moreno. And then Jonah Heim, I know he's not going to produce what he did last year. Our average with the runners in scoring position was astronomical, but they traded Mitch Garver, or Mitch Garver left as a free agent. Who's backing him up that's going to take the at-bats that he was sharing last year? He's going to play. I think he's really safe. And then Campusano is another interesting guy batting average-wise. The guy can really hit. I'm a fan. A little unknown with how much the Padres are going to play him. I think you're a big fan of Campusano as well. So why don't you just talk to me about Luis Campusano a little bit as far as what you like about him?
I think he is going to play a lot. I think he's kind of a good overall hitter. He's one of the better hitters as far as making contact. He doesn't I don't think he strikes out very much. He's only 25, hasn't really had a great opportunity. He's a high draft capital guy. He was came from Georgia, but he was a second round pick in the draft and many years ago. If you're looking back at his minor league days and everything, like you're not really seeing like big seasons from him, like 500 plus plate appearances. You're not seeing like a nice full total. But when you look at the years individually and all the levels at which he hit, you add up those numbers per year. And this is a guy that consistently hit 15, 20 home runs at every level in the minors. Had a walk rate right around his strikeout rate, which is obviously pretty impressive. And last year, again, we don't put too much stock in the small sample, but a 12% walk rate in nearly 200 plate appearances, I thought was pretty impressive. Had a hot, nice little run there. So, if you put his strikeout rate closer to 15-20%, I think that's pretty solid. And batting average wise, I think he's one of the higher batting average guys among the position there.
I agree on all of that. Do you think he can handle a full catching load where he can get that play amount of plate appearances needed to really help you?
When your alternative is Kyle Higashioka, I think yes.
Higgy.
He'll hit some bombs against lefties. That's a guarantee. If I play DFS this year, I'm going to play some Higgy against lefties.
Smart man. A couple other ones on here. Mitch Garver, another guy that's just going to DH. I think he's the third catcher on the roster, so he's not going to catch at all. Again, I like that personally because you're not going to get dinged up. He's had a tendency in the past to get injured. Guy's a good hitter, so I'm a fan of him. And then Ohapi came back like a house on fire like we talked about last year. The Angels are going to play him a lot, it feels like. I think he only missed two or three starts at the last 6 weeks of last year. So if they play him, give him as much as he could eat, you might see a lot of home runs. The lineup's not going to produce a lot of runs in RBIs, but the more at bats, the better, more opportunities he can get.
Yeah, I mean, I like Logan Hoppy very much. I think it's like Yainer Diaz, but on what looks like worse team context. But if you look at just like run production and the actual lineup, it's really not as bad as you think. Really, the only thing kind of weighing them down is like the Angels' curse, like the curse of Artie Moreno. Imagine if like Trout is actually active in that lineup and there's like a little bit of, it's almost like reverse magic, like Ohtani leaves, no one expects Trout to stay healthy. And then all of a sudden, just like everything happens to click. Like that's just the way the world works sometimes. It's like, the total contrarian play. But Logan Ohapi fits in right in the middle of there. I think he is a 25 home run bat. I think he could hurt you in batting average a little bit, but that's fine. It's okay to chase our crushes in the middle rounds. And then Mitch Garver is just, I don't know. I mean, this is not how you should play fantasy. You don't feel like you should draft someone because you like you feel like you owe them. Because last year, man, I had Garver every team and the Rangers kept playing him every day and playing him and playing him. And even when Jonah Heim came back, they still found out bats for him and he just got it done. And the only problem with Mitch Garver is that he's never had 500 plus plate appearances. like it's impossible. It's really hard to project that. Like even if you look at, you'll go to roster resource, you'll see 500, you'll see, you know, hit, projected to hit fourth in the lineup, not platooning. And what, by that measure, you're looking at a guy that's supposed to have 600 plate appearances, but he has just never done it. So I don't know how that'll happen. Is it like now when he's like, you know, in his 30s, that this is the finally the year it happens? I don't know. I hope it does, but I'm willing to pay the price. And I feel like everyone, every other system is under projecting Mitch Garver, even though he's 33.
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly when we started that that is a fun tier to shop in. There's a lot of good players to take advantage of there.
By the way, not only has he never had, Mitch Garver has never had more than 359 plate appearances in a season. So yeah, it is asking for a lot. So, but of course there's value in kind of keeping yourself in check, right? You're not just going to put 640 plate appearances for Garver, because then obviously he'll pop in as like catcher two or three. So got to keep expectations reasonable. We do want to, you know, we are recording late at night. We're on the West Coast. We want to get to sleep at some point before we touch on the next tier briefly. Any love for Bo Naylor, Josh's younger brother, and Miles's older brother, by the way, New Oakland A, the third brother, Miles Nelson.
I guess
Miles Nelson. No, sorry, that's Miles Nelson from pitcher list. Miles, because we were drafting with him at Scarf. Miles Naylor.
I think it's a pretty good bloodline in that family, huh? Three major leaguers, or future when Miles makes it there. I'm really not drafting much Bo Naylor this year. There's just too many guys around him I like. I think it's interesting upside. That Guardians lineup still scares me. I'm shocked I got Guardians right instead of saying Indians, but I'm proud of myself for that. But I think it's kind of a wait and see year for me with Bo Naylor. And if he pays off, shake somebody's hand that got him and say congratulations.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's touch on these the guys that you would consider the catcher twos. You got the two Toronto guys, Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen. You've got Ryan Jeffers and the currently undraftable or not being really drafted Christian Vasquez, apparently in camp. They're talking about splitting those guys, which makes sense. Or I'm sorry, platooning, which does make sense because they just, you know, they are a perfect platoon mix. And then Vasquez is a better defensive catcher. He just has no pop. Meanwhile, Jeffers, if you were to give him full plate appearances against you know, lefties, he would probably hit 20 home runs with ease. So you got those two guys platooning. Who else you got? Tyler Stevenson on Cincinnati, almost like a forgotten, nobody cares about him. And then Shea Langeliers of the Oakland A's, another big power guy, bad batting average guy. If you want to throw another bad batting average power guy, you got Jake Rogers in the mix. So let's touch on those guys real quick.
Yeah, the Blue Jay situation is really interesting. That DH spot with Justin Turner there is, I would wonder, without really seeing any spring training games, is that going to be open for one of the catchers to use this year? Usually it takes care of itself because Danny Jansen gets hurt. He's a guy I really can't get over the man lift for him. You know, last 483 at-bats, Danny Jansen's had 32 homers and 97 RBIs.
Yeah.
A normal guy, that's over one season. That's incredible stats. The problem is that's over two seasons. He's averaging just over 200 at-bats per season in his career. So he's can't stay healthy. It's just a fact. How many at-bats is he going to get you this year? Is that why you like Kirk so much? He's got a good hit tool and he's going to get the opportunity to play when Jansen gets hurt. Why do you have Kirk above Jansen in that case?
I have Kirk above because I feel in my heart, my bone of bones, not my heart of hearts, because this is not a emotional thing. I feel Alejandro Kirk. Wow, that was a bad accent. Edit, please. Alejandro Kirk is due for a big season. He had a really nice one. He hit 285 with a walk rate higher than his K rate. There are very few players that do that. And I know in 5x5 Roto, we're not really looking at that, but these are underlying metrics of play discipline of a guy that you kind of want in the lineup. And granted, he's just cheap. And just per our valuations, he's coming in closer to the guys above him than he is this next group. So he's kind of in a no man's land on his own around like 250, 270 ADP. And to me, he's just, even in partial playing time, you don't find batting average like that, you know, late in drafts. And so there are very few spots for that. I feel like people are looking at that 250 from last year and the struggles and things like that. And I don't know. I think his bat will find its way into the lineup consistently. And it's the Danny Jansen thing too. Like, I love Danny Jansen too. The guy mashes when he plays, but like you said, hardly ever on the field. It's always hurt.
So would you call it a roto gut feeling?
I would call it that indeed. It's one of my guys this year. He's one of my highest rostered players. Usually, if I don't have a second catcher in that second tier of the Garver Camposano range, then usually I'll grab Kirk, and usually he's available around his ADP.
Another guy, Shea Bangaliers, we shall call him. Really terrible offense, really high K rate, almost 30%. Seemed like he kind of figured some things out in the second half. Really good barrel percentage, 13.3% for the season, 44% hard hit, 113 max EV. I like that he just improved his overall exit velocity in the second half from 89.5 miles an hour to 92 miles an hour. That's a big jump. Again, it's a half a year, so what is sustainable? But as these younger players kind of start to mature and get comfortable, the game slows down. He possibly can put up some good power numbers in a bad lineup and really get at a late cost and could help you out, but batting average is going to hurt.
Yeah, and again, a lot of it's roster construction fit. You have a Freddie Freeman, and just you if you're inputting your players like as you draft, especially if it's a slow draft or draft champions, and you're keeping track of like say the 80th percentile targets, and you just notice you're a little high on the batting average and a little low on the power. It's just a automatic fit. It just makes sense. A guy like that would make more sense. A few other names I'll mention around here. Austin Wells, who ironically looks like David Wells with his mustache, even though there's no relation. He's not his son. He is looking to be the starting catcher for the Yankees. I did want to mention there's a kid there who just continues to exceed expectations at every level. And his name is Ben Rice. So he's somebody that is interesting, I think, to watch here in spring training this year.
Calling him the next Judge, I'm reading.
What? Oh, wow. I better catch up on my reading. Comps. Jeez, yeah. yeah, I'm the next, I don't know, Einstein. who else? Rene Pinto is interesting for the power. I don't know. Tampa Bay. I don't know.
It's gross like down here. There's a big cliff, feels like, after Langoliers. You're going to kind of be shooting darts in the dark, find somebody you like, find something that with an opportunity. Connor Wong runs a little bit, can be a little interesting. Patrick Bailey started off good with the Giants, but he really doesn't seem like that good of a hitter. Pinto's hard hit rate was great, but not sustainable. We talked about Freddie Fermin a little bit, if he can get some playing time at catcher, but it's pretty slim down here.
Yeah, pretty bleak. Just a quick mention is Ivan Herrera. He's a popular draft champions guy. He's not ideal as your catcher too. Like at that point, if you're taking him, he's not going to get very many plate appearances this season. Maybe not more than 200, 250, unless if something unfortunate happens to the older Contreras and it's the IL or something, then that's really the only opportunity. And then that would probably be a popular fab ad. And then you've got if you really wanted, you're talking about gross. If you want to dabble in the, Yasmani Grandal in Pittsburgh as the backup, and then Gary Sanchez, it's just, I'd rather not, I think. But that brings me up. Let's close things off with the man that is not yet a catcher, but is a former first overall MLB draft pick.
Yeah, I'm looking, watching some good, interesting draft strategies, and Henry Davis on the Pirates, he is outfield eligible only. Depends how many games a week he's going to catch. With Grandal there now, it puts a little wrinkle in it. It might take him 3, maybe 4 weeks to get catcher eligibility, but he could play some outfield. Other than that, he could DH. He is interesting. He's got some speed, got some power, got some pedigree. But you're having to draft 3 catchers basically in the draft, and you're using one of the valuable roster spots for probably a minimum of 3 weeks on stashing him.
Yeah, this is a case where a little extra attention in fantasy baseball goes a long way, and even then it may not work out. But if you are into the I want to have Henry Davis on my team for when it happens, you need to almost plan out who you can use at least for that first week of the season. You look at the schedule and you'll say, okay, who's the guy I can grab in the 30th round that can work out for me, that maybe they're going to Coors or whatever it, or to a Great American, whatever it may be. And then maybe you'll keep them for week two, or you might have to stream them. But either way, again, in that case, you're kind of taking up even three spots for a catcher. But the good thing in this case is Henry Davis probably would be usable as like your outfield four or five.
If you want to go down that road, not me.
Yeah, it's a lot. That's it. I mean, that's the catcher pool. We're going to talk about outfielders next week. And then in the meanwhile, any little tips or draft strategy or any insight you want to impart on us before your beat OC, or you just want to like let it row or let it run on Thursday?
Just only tips is 4 more weeks until Vegas.
4 more weeks. Here we go, baby. That's it.
Let's go.
Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Jason and I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. And that's it. We're going to talk about outfield next week. For my co-host, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.